All right, no more calls. For many weeks now, I've been teaching on the fallacies and fancy and fabrications that evolution uses to build its case. It's not science, it's a religion. It's a faith premise seeking a verification and refusing to recognize its falsification. Period. If Jesus tarries and history goes along, it'll be recognized as a great fallacy of this century and the previous one. And one of the things that I focused on that's very hard in a message, I always am fighting the clock, and it's very hard in a message to do anything but skim the surface. I try, but it doesn't have the opportunity I have on a festival to just read something. I only read a page or two, but can't really dig. Tonight, outside the Roman series, I want to read something. Back to dating, that newspapers and Discovery Channel, Educational Channel, public television, school textbooks, everywhere you turn, they would have you believe they've perfected dating methods. Now, I delved into this like a dive bomber in the messages more than once. But in Marvin L. Lubinow's book, Bones of Contention, he had an appendix called The Dating Game. I hope you don't get bored. A very popular myth is that the radioactive dating methods are an independent confirmation of the geologic timescale and the concept of evolution, human evolution. This myth includes the idea that the various dating methods are independent of one another and hence act as controls. The methods appear so impressive that many creationists have accepted them as evidence that the earth is very old. Perhaps the best way to expose this myth for what it is, science fiction, and if you're hidden behind the camera, you can move, it's okay. You don't get a stiff neck over there, Bruce. Perhaps the best way to expose this myth for what it is, science fiction, and nobody need call because we're not going to answer any phones. Perhaps the best way to expose this myth for what it is, science fiction, is to present a case study of the dating of the East African KBS Tuff strata, or strata, and the famous fossil KNMER, which I'll explain in a minute, 1470. And explain it as recorded in the scientific journals, especially the British journal Nature, a trumpeting magazine supporting evolution. Richard Leakey, son of the famed paleoanthropologists Lewis and Mary Leakey, not too happy in their later years, as I mentioned this morning, because of Louis Leakey's philandering. He made a practice of using their marriage bed for his many conquests of other women. Richard Leakey was just 23 when he bought a helicopter and first visited the rich fossil deposits east of Lake Rudolph, now Lake Turkana, in northern Kenya, The year was 1967. He was so stunned by what he saw that he immediately organized an expedition to that area to search for hominoid fossils. The result is the permanent base known as Koubi Fora, which has produced some of the most striking hominoid fossils discoveries in the entire history of paleontology. The most important fossil discovered there is one that, for all its fame, has never been given a respectable name. These are icons of evolution, our ancestors. It is KNM-ER-1470, KNM for Kenya National Museum, where it's housed, ER for East Rudolph, where it was found, and 1470, the museum acquisition number. Now, there are so few fossils, relatively, but this marvelous book has listed every single fossil by location, charted their dates, given by the dating methods of the evolutionists themselves, though the author naturally doesn't agree with their dating methods, but by their own records, they have some explaining to do. As I mentioned in the message this morning, if I can find it quickly. For example, he always has charts. This won't be big enough for you to see on the camera, but you'll see a page on this side here in which he starts. I'll interpret it. On the bottom, Tanzania, Olduvai hominoid 13 cranial fragments in the museum, KNMER 992. Dated by them 1.5 million years ago. Olduvai by hominoid, 16 skull fragments from Tanzania. Three different numbers, KNMRER-820, KNMWT-15000, and KNMER-1466. And the one we're talking about, KNMER-1407 is in the list here somewhere in all this fine print. Here it is, down near the bottom where this finger is. And it's dated, by their dating, 2 million years ago. Skull 1470 is very modern in appearance, and it's the same listing. It's the most complete listing of all the fossils ever discovered, credited or attributed to or claimed to be fossils of man. For example, this chart dates as the oldest one, a mandible teeth from China, 2 million years old. One of the charts traces all the way back to the footprints that I talked about this morning, and an elbow that takes us clear back, a human elbow, to 4 million years by their own reckoning. I'll find that chart when we go to music somewhere and show it to you. But let me keep reading. We're talking about KNMER-1470. You got that?
Yes, sir.
Skull 1470 is very modern in appearance, but it was originally believed to be about 2.9 million years old. This conflict between its modern appearance and its ancient age presented a serious challenge to all currently held theories of human evolution. It precipitated a conflict over the dating of the fossil, which lasted 10 years. And very simply stated, if it was that old, 2.9 million at the time this was found, then all of the evolutionary charts had to be arranged, because this fossil was in strata earlier than it was supposed to be. So either the dates are wrong, or the fossil's wrong, or evolution's wrong. One of the early geologists to work with Richard... Now, let me tell you how important it is to pay attention to just one falsifying error. If someone is peddling a manuscript, a rare manuscript, written by Shakespeare, some play, and it has ancient look and all the things that give it credible claim to being from the days and written by Shakespeare, and there's just one reference to somebody listening to a radio, that one word, for example, and I may use this example in a fictitious conversation next Sunday, that one, how many times do you have to hear the word radio to know you got a problem? Once is all you need. One fossil that's supposed to be 500 years or 5,000 or 500,000 years recent, more recent, and you dig it up in strata that was dated 2 million years ago, that's like hearing the word radio before radios were invented. Except my analogy is a real one, because we know that radios were invented after Shakespeare. We're on slippery ground everywhere we turn with the evolutionists, with their dates and with their fossils, because they argue in a circle. What's the date on this strata? Well, similar strata over here had these fossils in it, and these fossils have been dated thus and so, therefore this rock must be. Well, now we find some other fossils in a similar rock. How old are these fossils? Well, that rock's dated this, so these fossils must be this. So you use fossils to date the rocks and rocks to date the fossils. That's circular reasoning. And the fossil dating was speculative in the beginning when Lyell started his geologic column. He just came up with an idea that it would take 80 million years, or 80,000 years, rather, for a certain thing to develop. Arbitrary. One of the early geologists to work with Richard Leakey at East Rudolph was a young woman from Yale University, K. Behrensmeyer, and in seeking to unravel the geology of the area, she discovered a layer of volcanic ash, or tuff, that turned out to be crucial in the dating of the fossils and the artifacts found in association with it. The spot where she first located this tuff became known as the K. Behrensmeyer site. This volcanic tuff has become known ever since as the KBS tuff, K. Behrensmeyer site. Richard Leakey, in a Denver lecture, laughingly remarked that K. Behrensmeyer is the only woman in the world who has had a volcanic ash named after her. If the KBS, that'll hit you after a while. If the KBS tuff were located anywhere else, no one would give it a second thought. However, at East Rudolph, it is of utmost importance. First, although human fossils and artifacts cannot be directly dated radiometrically, the KBS tuff, in which the artifacts are found, can be, because it contains radioactive potassium-40, which decays to argon-40. And remember, the method is they capture electrons, but they're in a crystal. And you remember when I discussed the potassium method, there is a player working also, natural formed crystals with the same argon molecule is in natural development, and they can't tell the difference. So you know how much is a result of decay, really an odd application of the word, through the capture of an electron and a reduction of the potassium, or just naturally forming argon, which is one of the most common minerals on this earth, or gases, or molecular element. But there's great faith in radioactive potassium-40 by these people, which decays to argon-40, which is a gas. Second, artifacts, tools, have been found in close association with the KBS tuff. The assumption is that the date of the tuff, done through potassium-argon dating, the date of the tuff gives an estimate of the age of the stone tools. Third, hundreds of Homo and Australopithecine fossils, that's southern ape man, have been found either above or below the KBS tuff. So both Homo and what are designated Australopithecine fossils, which are the word means southern ape man, have been found either above or below. Thus, the date of the KBS tuff becomes a maximum age for fossils found above it. It couldn't be older than the tuff. And a minimum age for fossils found below it. You understand?
Yes,
sir. The tuff's laid down, and that fixes the age. The age of the tuff tells you that everything underneath it, in theory, is older. I reverse what I said earlier. Everything underneath it was laid down before the tuff was laid down, so it's older. And everything on top of it was laid down after the tuff was laid down. So it becomes a benchmark date if you can properly date the tuff. That's the question. The date of the KBS tuff thus becomes a maximum age. You already said that. And of all the fossils found in association with the KBS tuff, skull 1470 is the most important. The KBS tuff is part of the Kaobi Fora Formation, a sequence of sediments about 300 feet deep or thick that crop out on the eastern shore of Lake Rudolph. These sediments cover an area about 50 miles north and south along the shore and extend about 20 miles east of the lake. The KBS tuff itself is only about 3 feet thick. Two other thin layers of volcanic tuff lie above the KBS, the Karari and the Okoti tuff. Another lies below it, the Tulu Bore tuff. The bulk of the sediments in which the fossils are found are not volcanic tuffs. So you're not finding the sediments, and the bulk of the fossils are not in the volcanic sediment. So it'll either be below it or above it, and there are three layers of tuff. The four tufts are like the floors of a four-story building, with the fossil-bearing sediments lying between them where the rooms of the building would be. Got that? Although the KBS tuff is the tuff's not, unless I implied the wrong thing, the tuff layers are not sequential. They're not tuff on top of tuff. It's tough sediments, tough sediments, tough sediments, tough sediments. So the floors are tough, and the building rooms in between sediments, or vice versa, as long as you know the difference. Although the KBS tuff is volcanic in origin, it is not a primary airfall tuff, like the ash that blew out of Mount St. Helens. That is, it was not deposited directly on the land when it was ejected from the volcano. Lake Rudolph was much larger at that time. Some ash fell into the lake and then made its way to the lake bottom. Some was carried by rivers into the lake. Thus, the KBS tuff has been transported by and deposited from water, which means you got a mixture of tuff that, if the potassium-argon dating was accurate, you'd know when the volcano blew up, or relatively close, because it sank as sediment in the lake. But because it's intermingled with tuff carried from other places by rivers, you don't necessarily know when and where that tuff was laid down. So remember a clock, you got to know when it starts. You got to know there's no external forces affecting it. Two of the three criteria. We got external forces affecting that which we're trying to determine and date for when the volcano blew up. And we've already got external factors affecting it. For this reason, it has a great deal of foreign material in it, making it very difficult to get pure samples for dating. The first attempt to date the volcanic rock layer known as KBS tuff was a feasibility study done in 1969, well before the discovery of the skull 1470. This is where problems come in. If you've already dated it and you discover a skull, you got a problem. If the skull is in this rock that's been previously dated, and it's the wrong date for the accepted evolutionary timeline, you got to remove heaven and earth and rock. And people start fighting and saying, well, it's not the fossil you say it is because it's in the wrong time sequence. But we better start dating again because we've dated it wrong. Because it can't be this early or it can't be this late because we got our sequence and we're out to prove our sequence. It cannot be allowed to be falsified. We've already decided what the sequence is. We're looking for proof of the sequence, and anything that doesn't prove it or contradicts it, we're going to throw it out, claim error, or maybe the skull's a fraud itself, because we cannot change our dates. It's a dating game. I haven't proven it yet, but this guy will. Richard Leakey, this was well before the discovery of the skull, that there was a feasibility study done in 69. Richard Leakey supplied rock samples to F.J. Fitch, Birkbeck College, University of London, and J.A. Miller, Cambridge University, who were recognized authorities in potassium-argon dating, shorthand K-A-R, K-A-R. Many species of mammals had been found below KBS tuff, as well as designated Australopithecine fossils, which are ape men, southern ape men by their designation, and human artifacts. It was imperative that these discoveries be placed in their proper chronological setting. In their report in Nature, Fitch and Miller first commented on the many possible sources of error in dating. Quote, "One of the most intractable of these," they said, "is the possible presence of extraneous argon derived from the inclusions of pre-existing rocks. To check for this extraneous argon, they first dated the raw rocks as they were originally submitted by Leakey. Their analysis gave dates from 212 to 230 million years of age." Now remember, you got human, Australopithecine, which is a southern ape man, and human artifacts. 212 to 230 million human artifacts. From these results, that couldn't be. Humans weren't around then, by their arguments. That couldn't be. From these results, it was clear that extraneous argon age discrepancy was present. In other words, we start out with extraneous stuff there because there's mixed in from rivers. Therefore, anything that's outside the preconceived evolutionary date frame, that's extraneous. The only thing that's acceptable are those that test within the allowable age according to the preconceived evolutionary pattern. They're not following facts. They're selecting facts to support a theory already accepted. The first question an outside observer would ask is, how do they know? The answer is that the associated fossils told them so. Huh? You want me to continue? Get on the phone. All right, no more calls. I quit on the question. The first question an outside observer would ask is, how'd they know that extraneous argon age discrepancy was present? I thought they were trying to just date it. The answer is that associated fossils told them so. In spite of our being assured that the dating methods constitute an independent confirmation of evolution, the associated fossils, given dates by evolutionists, had already determined the outside limits for dates that would be acceptable. And thus, any material that gave a date outside the margin of the prior determined age of fossils found were not acceptable. The only dates that would be considered acceptable, even though they're using the same independent scientific potassium argon method, are the ones that date material within the previously decreed age of fossils found in that rock. That's circular reasoning. We find fossils, they have dates from other places or dates assigned to them. Now we're supposed to be independently dating a rock by a scientific method of electron capture and formation of argon gas from the decay of potassium. But if we find evidence of material that is dated outside the range already given to the fossils found in the rock, it's considered unacceptable. In other words, you cannot be allowed to falsify the date of the fossils, because the fossils have already been dated, and if we find dates on this rock that are outside the margin, that's unacceptable, and there must be extraneous material in the rock. Circular reasoning. Based on their alleged evolution, the Australopithecine, another mammal fossils found beneath the KBS tuff, had determined that the rock should be somewhere between 2 and 5 million years old, because that was already given as the date for these fossils. These fossils are found in this beneath this tuff. Therefore, the tuff was laid down, and the rocks of those containing fossils found beneath the KBS tuff could only be allowed to be between 2 and 5 million years old. Therefore, anything beyond was obviously the result of extraneous argon. And therefore, the date of 212, 230 million had to be thrown out, not because of the scientific dating test, but because it didn't match the already assigned dates that the fossils found in it. You following that bit of rhetorical nonsense? Dates of 212 to 230 million years ago were notoriously far off. These dates would place the KBS Tuff in the Triassic period of the Mesozoic era, which is early dinosaur times. Hence, it was obvious that these dates were wrong. Without the associated fossils, however, there would be no way for a geologist to know if these were good dates or bad dates. Under other circumstances and without the fossils to guide them, geologists could well have accepted these dates as good dates. The potassium-argon method gave them 212 to 230 million years. The only problem is there are fossils in these rocks, not allowed to be more than 2 to 5 million years old. That test got to be thrown out. When fitting rock layers into their proper sequences over large geographic areas, it is evolution and the fossils that guide the geologists. Yet, the geologic column is sold to us as though the rocks have been dated by these scientific methods, when in fact the only scientific method results allowed are those that confirm the already determined dates of the fossils found therein. You starting to feel conned? To compensate for this obvious error in dating the KBS Tuff, Fitch and Miller stated, quote, "It would only be possible." Now look, these are pretty credentialed guys. Fitch, Birkbeck College, University of London, J.A. Miller, Cambridge University, recognized authorities in potassium-argon dating. They don't know Jack Spitz about fossils. But they're not allowed to exist in the community of accepted and publishable potential authors if they make a lie out of the fossil dating people. Reminds me of pyramid studies. Egyptologists had made their reputation for so many years saying the Great Pyramid was a tomb, though there was never any body in it. And unlike every other pyramid, there are no hieroglyphics. And the only hieroglyphics there is a forged cartouche in the upper chambers. And I spent a couple of festivals, and Alexander Sitkin proved that forgery. Had no body ever been there. The bodies were buried around it by people who worshipped it. But you are collapsing not a geologic column, but an academic column of generations who have built their reputation on saying it was a grave, a burial pyramid. Once the academic community and peer pressure begins to develop, reputations are at stake. You're faced with the same thing Jesus was faced with the Pharisees, who knew that only one with God in him could perform his miracles, but when in front of their crowd, they said he did it by Beelzebub. Ego involvement. People will fight harder for something they said than they would for the same idea if they hadn't said it. Geologists are not independent. Fitch and Miller stated, quote, "It would only be possible to date this stuff by careful extraction of undoubtedly juvenile components for analysis." In other words, Fitch and Miller then proceeded to remove from the whole rock samples those components of the rock which they believed were undoubtedly juvenile or young, that showed no sign of weathering or alteration. The observer can be forgiven if he asks another question. How do they know for sure which components of the rock are undoubtedly young? Thus began the long process based upon evolutionary and other philosophical assumptions by which the geochronologist manipulates, or better, massages, the data to guarantee that he gets a, quote, good date. Now, this author is kinder than I am. He says, I want to stress that the geochronologist does this in absolute sincerity. Now, I want to stress, he does it because the Romans, God's taken sense out of their head. He is so committed, this author says, to evolution and its attendant age demands that he believes implicitly that he removes error from his data to arrive at truth. This obvious subjectivity in it escapes him. Bovine scatology. It is a perfect illustration of circular reasoning in an experimental frame of reference by people who profess to be wise and have become morons because God took sense out of them. The experimenter, they're not that dumb. They know what they're doing. The experimenter manipulates the data to guarantee that he gets the results that is needed. In computer language, it's garbage in, garbage out. Lubinow, give me a break. He's being too nice. You're going to make friends with these people. This reminds me of... let's go on. The only thing I don't like about this whole book, he's too nice to them. And believe you me, do they butcher him? I mean, I wish you'd say, let me stop for a minute to describe these people. Filth, foul, dirty, dirty. Fitch and Miller requested new samples from Leakey because they didn't like the ones they had because it didn't prove what they wanted it to prove. So they requested new samples from Leakey containing, quote, fresher pumice lumps and feldspar crystals. Experiments were conducted on the pumice and the feldspar crystals separately using three different processes, K-AR age determination, argon 40 to argon 30, total degassing, and 40 argon 39 argon age spectrum. Fitch and Miller concluded that the KBS tuff was, quote, very close to 2.6 million years. This figure of 2.6 million years, down from 212 to 230 million, was widely published in both the scientific and popular press. They couldn't even get a hearing with that 212 million to 230. Richard Leakey stated that 1470 was found below rock that was accurately and securely dated at 2.6 million years ago. And still spitting out that garbage, I read a newspaper article in the LA Times several weeks ago on this recent find by Mave Leakey. Remember? Now, this selective juvenile dating of the tuff. In other words, I've got to find a sample now that is within the 2.6 million range because that's what fossils say I must date it as. And thus, because this date had been derived and published before he found skull 1470, Richard Leakey stated, it was found below rock that was accurately dated and securely dated at 2.6 million years ago. In 1972, also before the skull 1470 was discovered, or at least before it was announced, Vincent Maglio, Princeton University, published in Nature a chronology of the hominoid-bearing sediments east of Lake Rudolph, which included the KBS tuff. His work was based upon the vertebrate faunas. Am I boring you?
No, sir.
Several animal species seem to show a significant degree of change through the stratigraphic sequence. This was interpreted as a rapid rate of evolution. Obviously, rapidly changing lineages make for more precise correlation than those that change slowly or not at all. The lineages, were of two species of pig and one species of elephant. Now, this is before they discover 1470. And another digger from Princeton University in KBS Tuff, same rock, finds two species of pig and one species of elephant. Although there were some problems, Malio's dates for the sediments were somewhat compatible with the radiometric date arrived at by Fitch and Miller, and were considered at the time to confirm their date. Okay? In 1974, a third chronology of the area was published in Nature, that British pro-evolution magazine, by Brock, University of Nairobi, Kenya, and Isaac, University of California, Berkeley. The study was based on the paleomagnetism of the deposits below the KBS Tuff, utilizing 247 samples. They stated their conclusion for the group of fossils, including skull 1470, as follows, quote, an age of 2.7 to 3.0 million years for this group is strongly indicated. Since this date referred to the sediments that skull 1470 was actually found in, and the KBS Tuff dated at 2.61 million years lies above the fossils, it seemed to represent a bullseye for the correlation of the various dating methods. The heading of the article stated that their measurements provide a valuable check on other dating methods. Later they said that because the isotopic and paleomagnetic ages were consistent, isotopic being the ones of the potassium and argon, and the paleomagnetic, another dating method, were consistent. Of course, they don't point out that the isotopic was a selective one done by Fitch and Miller. But because they were consistent, this, quote, independent evidence greatly strengthens our proposed chronology. However, Brock and Isaac also made the following comment. The correlations shown in Figure 4, which is not in front of you here, are not fully independent and rely partly upon potassium argon and faunal evidence, as well as upon the basic polarity data. Aha! The potassium argon dating selected rocks that conformed with previously determined fossil dates found in the rock. And now we find the basic polarity data, the paleomagnetic, another system of dating, took into account the dates of the potassium argon. Wish, influencing one another. The starting point for the correlation is the age 2.61 million years plus or minus 0.26 obtained by Fitch and Miller from selected sanidine crystals from pumice specimens from the KBS Tuff. So they started with Fitch and Miller's date. This comment indicates that the correlation by Brock and Isaac was not as independent of the other dating methods as they claimed to be. Also, am I boring you?
No, sir.
In 1974, Anthony Herford, Birkbeck College, University of London, and that's the same place that Fitch came from. Yes. So he's a colleague of Fitch. Also in 1974, Anthony Herford attempted to date the East Rudolph sediments using still another method, fission track dating involving uranium. His purpose was to check out an unpublished study by Fitch and Miller that suggested that vast portions of the East Rudolph sediments had been changed or altered by volcanic heat. What'd you drop? A mint. You need a mint to take pictures with. I don't need that camera anyway. Sit down and eat a mint. How do we get a cameraman that's addicted to mints? You sit next to the cameraman so you can give him mints? You got all the mints? Go over here. Go to the other side of the room. Who's training these voices of faith and camera people? You can't suppress a hiccup in here that I don't see, or anything else. Don't need that camera, set it on the floor. Where were we? In 1974, Anthony Herford, Birk Beck College, attempted to date the East Rudolph sediment using still another method, fission track dating involving uranium. His purpose was to check out an unpublished study by Fitch and Miller that suggested that vast portions of the East Rudolph sediments had been changed or altered by volcanic heat or hot groundwater around 1.75 million years ago, causing partial or complete overprinting of the apparent ages obtained from them. Overprinting erases or obscures previous events. Herford's conclusion regarding his fission track specimen: the specimen has either suffered no thermal annealing or that it has been totally annealed or changed at 1.8 million years ago. As this tuff is within the Kubi algae formation and is stratigraphically below the 2.6 million year KBS tuff, the second alternative is accepted as the correct interpretation. That is, it's been totally annealed or changed at 1.8 million years ago. He agreed with Fitch and Miller that the sediments had been altered at about 1.75 to 1.8 million years ago. One could be excused for asking why the annealing or changing of the lower sediments at 1.1 million years ago did not call into question the KBS tuff date of 2.6 million years ago when something lower than it had been changed at 1.8 million. Got that? You know, if your legs are cut off, you don't walk the same, even though you got hip bones. Got that? The KBS tuff has been castrated. A study of Herford's methodology illustrates how dogma finds its way into science. He started by referring to the date of the KBS Tough as a firm date. Apparently, the date became firm because he felt that it was supported by fossil and paleomagnetic evidence. He did not mention that the fossil correlation was only of the most general sort, and that the paleomagnetic date was based on the radiometric date. In spite of an obvious need for caution, Herford's acceptance of the KBS Tough date became the benchmark on which he based his fission track conclusions. It seems, however, that Herford set up a strange scenario. In the absence of clear physical evidence to the contrary, the Kubi algae formation, which is below the KBS Tough, would be older than the KBS Tough because it was laid down first. It's hard to understand how the Kubi algae formation, laid down first, could have experienced an overprinting at 1.8 million years ago, and then later on have the KBS Tough laid down on top of it with a date of 2.61 million years ago. Got that? If, however, they were laid down in their present sequence, and then some sort of thermal event overprinted the Kubi algae at 1.8 million, how do we know that the KBS Tough wasn't affected as well? We don't. It would certainly seem to compromise the firm date of the KBS Tough. You know, I really don't care if you carry 15 mints in your mouth at the same time and you look like a chipmunk with your jaws out. I just get distracted at somebody handing it to you. One of the KBS Tough had any mints in it fossilized. At any rate, it's clear the various dating methods are related and the dates obtained are not independent of one another. That's the point. It's not as scientific as they try to make it sound. Late in 1974, Fitch, Miller, and Associates published the results of their revised study, confirming their original dating of the KBS Tough at 261 plus or minus 0.26 million years ago. They also reported a broad scatter of apparent ages from those not-so-young samples that were mixed in that they threw out as not fitting the time zone. The scatter had ages from 10 different sampling ranging from 0.52 to 2.64 million years ago. That's a pretty big scatter. Referring to other studies, they stated the compatibility of independent evidence is a very strong argument for accepting the chronology now proposed for East Rudolph. However, we have seen from the other studies they are not independent but were linked to the original radiometric date by Fitch and Miller. 2 years later, you want me to continue? Get on the phone. All right, no more calls. You want me to continue?
Yes, sir.
By late 74, 2 years after the skull 1470 had been presented, the reason I'm doing this tonight is a footnote on all the teaching to show you that what I skim can be backed up. I mean skimmed. I can only selectively use illustrations and sometimes just give you conclusions. But none of the conclusions are just taken off the surface. For example, I could have read to you today out of The Collapse of Evolution. I could have read to you the conclusion about the Java Man that Dubois, in his later years, changed his mind that it was not the missing link, but it was a fossil of a gibbon. A much told story, but not true. Like rumors that Darwin was converted before he died. Well, I don't know whether he was or not, but the rumor has no basis. It's that kind of stuff that creates the mention of a radio in Shakespeare and creates a collapse of the argument against evolution when you start engaging in the same kind of non-factually supported matters to his dying breath. I held up the book that's the most complete biography on Dubois, who found the Java Man, so-called. He did not to his dying day, and he died a bitter man, still saying he had found the missing link, even though science had totally discredited it, as I will show you more in the messages over the next two Sundays. I'm not going to tell you something in the message that isn't backed up, and that's why I'm doing this festival. We may put it as a supplement to the Roman series in the CD-ROMs. By late 74, 2 years after Skull 1470 had been presented to the world, the KBS Tough had been dated five different times by four different dating methods. The alleged compatibility of the four different methods would seem to make all of this a geologist's dream. Remember, this is called the dating game. What better proof could one want for the reliability of the various dating methods to furnish independent confirmation of the dates for the fossil material? Because 1470 was found below rock dated at 2.61 million years ago, and above rock dated at 3.18 million years, Skull 1470 was thus estimated to be an incredible 2.9 million years old. Richard Leakey had found the world's oldest fossil belonging to the genus Homo. On the surface, all seemed serene. However, under the surface, paleoanthropology was seething in ferment. Skull 1470, with its estimated date of 2.9 million years ago, presented the evolutionary world with an intolerable situation. It wasn't 212 or 230, but it was still a problem. Richard Leakey did not exaggerate when he declared, "Either we toss out this skull, or we toss out our theories of early man." Because even though it's 212, it isn't 212 or 230, 2.9 million was too old for a human fossil by their already pre-declared dates. The problem was quite simple. The theory of human evolution did not allow for a skull so modern in morphology. It didn't have the knots and the bulges and the various things that had been put in all these drawings of moving from knuckle walking to erect. It was a modern skull. And the theory of human evolution did not allow for a skull so modern in morphology to be that old. It was absolutely predictable to those of us who watch these matters unfold that something would have to give. Only three things could happen to relieve the stress that the theory of human evolution was experiencing. The date for 1470 could be revised. 1470 could be assigned to the most distant and primitive form of Homo. Or three, 1470 could be reevaluated and designated as an Australopithecine, an ape man and not human. Actually, all three of these solutions happened in one way or another. The date was eventually revised. The fossil was assigned to the category Homo habilis, handyman, and some, including one of Richard Leakey's close associates, Alan Walker, said that the 1470 was actually an Australopithecine, a southern ape man. As these revisions took place, paleoanthropologists heaved almost audible sighs of relief. Richard Leakey, however, continued to fight for the original date. Although he was committed to evolution and was aware of the problem, the date for the skull 1470 presented for evolution, his situation was somewhat different. He was considered the discoverer of the skull 1470. Actually, it was discovered by a member of his team, but no one will care if you discover the oldest fossil broccoli. But if you're fortunate enough to discover the oldest fossil human, you've got an icon. The world will beat a path to your door. The acclaim and prestige such a person receives is beyond belief. Human fossils work a very special kind of magic. Richard Leakey needed this magic. He was only 28 when the skull was discovered. He had no formal college training. He had learned paleoanthropology at the feet of his parents, Lewis and Mary. Some paleoanthropologists have never forgiven him for entering the field by a different door. If skull 1470 was 2.9 million years old, he had discovered the oldest member of the genus Homo, and he's an outsider. He didn't go through the university route. If 1470 was not that old, he'd lose that distinction. The problems that 1470's age would pose for evolution were not as vital to him as the status 1470 would give him in establishing him in the field of paleoanthropology. Hence, he resisted any lowering of the date for 1470. Now you know why I put in the frame of reference for presenting the resurrection the psychological conclusion that if the Jewish religious leaders caused the death of Christ because they charged him with blasphemy for calling himself God and he rose from the dead, it was more than just academic to them. It was prestige, position, bread and butter, and even life. People will fight when something means something personally to him. He was hero or rat. While Fitch and Miller were busy confirming their original results, still another study was already underway by G.H. Curtis and his associates at the University of California, Berkeley. Now, I find it very interesting. I'll show you something that we move on a bit. Somebody mailed me, I'll just tell you, somebody mailed me a magazine from San Francisco that has all the sex ads, naked women, and every other kind of weird thing that you can get engaged in if you're a sexual deviant. And they mailed it to me because this underground newspaper had an article about a revolution against evolution. Of all places at Berkeley, where geneticists are at work disproving evolution. When you're outside the mainframe, that's your publishing mode. I mean, the article is a brilliantly written scientific article naming these famous scientists at Berkeley that are at work, one of them specializing in the E. coli bacteria, and proving that it cannot happen without intelligent design. But you're not going to get the article about them published in a prestigious journal that is pro-evolution or Darwin. So they go to this Sexpot magazine. And I'm flattered that my parishioner out there was sure that I would be unmoved by all the sex stuff. He decided that I was immune to that. So my compliments. You marry a beauty like I have, you don't have to go to magazines. Although I like the way the song I sang today. Life here is grand with Melissa I love so dear. I haven't got that many friends I love so dear. I may sing it next time with this church I love so dear. But I didn't like the song with friends I love so dear. I haven't got that many. Most of the friends I've had through my life were such that I didn't need enemies. But anyway, there are not too many pastors you could risk mailing that magazine to. I'm one of the few. But I think it very eloquently states where you have to go to get anti-evolutionary material published. The tunnel. These University of California, Berkeley scientists use conventional KAR dates on pumice from three separate areas of the KBS tuff. They claim to distinguish two tuff units. One from areas 10 and 105 gave an age of 1.6 million years ago, and the other from areas 131, where skull 1470 was found, gave an age of 1.82 million years, a million years younger. and interesting matching the change that was found in lower rocks by hot thermal activity. These dates were considered younger than the dates the five previous studies had reported. Immediately the war started. Commenting on the broad scatter of results Fitch and Miller had obtained earlier, remember, from 0.5 to 2.6, they gave this explanation. Contamination by ancient bedrock material during the reworking of the tuffs was suggested to account for the anomalously or unexplained old dates, whereas subsequent or conflicting old dates, whereas subsequent alteration overprinting of the pumice fragments used for dating by alkaline-rich and possibly heated groundwater may explain the anomalous young dates by partial loss of radiogenic argon. So they incorporated that alteration of lower rocks and tried to get along with the rest of their scientists who had done the other studies by trying to give an explanation for the discrepancies. Since the whole point of their exercise was to establish the age of the KBS tuff, the question again must be asked. How did they know that the older dates or the younger dates were anomalous? That is, out of correlation with. Anomalous with reference to what? It was obvious that it had already been determined what the proper age should be. How was this determined? By the concept of evolution. The age of the KBS tuff and of skull 1470 must be lowered to fit the previously declared age of hominoid fossils. The Curtis article challenged the validity of the 40-argon-39-argon technique for this particular dating situation and criticized the methodology of Fitch and Miller. It further stated that, quote, older pumices may also be... am I wearing you out?
No, sir.
Older pumices may also be present in the KBS tuff horizon. Got any more mints for the rest of them? Older pumices may also be present in the KBS tuff horizon, which could account for the 2.6 million year date by Fitch and Miller. Criticizing the samples used by Fitch and Miller, the dating method employed by Fitch and Miller, and the laboratory technique of Fitch and Miller left little more to be said. All of the above cited articles spoke of the great difficulty in getting rock or crystal samples that were not altered, weathered, or derived from older rock. Curtis et al. Explained at length their efforts to extract from the whole rock samples the portions that were suitable for dating. However, Fitch and Miller also went to great lengths to extract suitable samples. The question arises, how does one know when one has good samples for dating? The only answer to that question is that good samples give dates that are in accord with evolutionary presuppositions. Bad samples are the ones that give dates not in conformity with evolution, a classic illustration of circular reasoning. Curtis et al. Also mentioned the factor that would ultimately determine the date of skull 1470, the evolution of the pigs. Quote, when some paleontologists compared the fauna associated with the KBS tuff in East Rudolph with those of other supposedly well-calibrated localities, the reliability of the date of 2.6 million years for the KBS was questioned. Although Malio found that the morphology of elephant fossils fit with a 2.5 million year date, Cook and Malio in 1972 pointed out that fossil pigs from below the KBS tuff horizon at East Rudolph seemed to correlate best with those from beds dating close to 2 million years in the Omo River area to the north of Ethiopia. Uh-huh. Now, are we going to date KBS tuff with the elephant fossil or the pig fossil? And the question's already answered, because the pig fossils on the evolutionary timescale, another one of their subjective things, are younger by a half a million. So if we got pig 2 million below KBS tough, then KBS tough cannot be more than 2 million, and we're going to drop the hominoid fossil another million years. Notice that elephant evolution fit the older date, pig evolution fit the younger date, even though these are subjective dates. Fossil determination. The pigs would ultimately win. This does not support the idea of concordant results that evolutionists talk about. Perhaps that's why Malio left geology to study medicine. It is fascinating to see that Curtis et al. Claimed authority for their dating results because of the high degree of correlation within their study. But that same claim was made for the older date. Also, five different dating projects involving four different dating techniques all supposedly agreed on the older date with reasonable margin of error. And don't forget, the first date was 212 to 230 million years. The 28 October 1976 issue of Nature, trumpet, 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 blow, evolution, contained not one but two dating projects for the KBS tuff, but two different methods. These two methods seem to agree on the older date for the tuff, and hence for skull 1470. The first of these studies was Fitch Miller, and another third one added to them, P.J. Hooker from Cambridge University. They first recalculated the results of their 69 work and told why. Developments in the analytical technique of argon 4039 argon dating since then, later technique, enable recomputation of the results obtained using, in addition, a more accurate value for the constant of proportionality J used in the 1969 experiments. Computer jargon. Recalculating with 1969 rock samples and utilizing both K-argon and the 40-argon, 39-argon methods gave them a revised estimate for the age of the KBS tuff of 2.42 million years. Calculating with rock samples obtained in 71 and 73 and using only the argon 40, argon 39 technique gave a minimum age for the KBS tuff of 2.4 million years. The close correlation of these two dating efforts with different radiometric techniques gave them confidence in the accuracy of their results. Because of the inherent difficulties of obtaining proper samples for dating, they also looked to other methods of support. This support came in an accompanying article in the same issue of Nature involving fission track dating of zircon crystals. We'll consider that article later. Fitch, Miller, and Hooker acknowledged the controversy that was raging around the dating of the KBS tuff. That controversy was largely because some stone tools were found in it. And one very human-looking fossil was found below it. Quote, over the past 5 years, opposition to the acceptance of a 2.5 million-year age for the KBS tuff has come from three sources. First, archaeologists and paleoanthropologists disturbed by the consequent antiquity of hominoid fossils and stone tools found close to or associated with the KBS tuff. Too old to be hominoids, yet it's hominoid tools. Second, and hominoid fossils. Second, paleontologists reporting apparent misfits between the faunal sequences in East Rudolph and elsewhere. And third, from a small program of conventional total fusion K-argon age determination on East Rudolph puma samples undertaken at Berkeley, which was that one that was much lower, a million years. I'll deal with these matters in reverse order. The small program at Berkeley is a reference, small program, Berkeley doesn't like that, is a reference to the work of, Birkbeck in London, and not in the same league with Berkeley in California. Sorry, Birkbeck. Berkeley ain't in the same league with Stanford. 5 minutes?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to go right through. I want to finish this. I don't even need any warning except the last 5 seconds so I can take my breath while they give a station break.
Yes,
you still with me?
Yes, sir.
Too cold in here. The small program, quote, at Berkeley is a reference to the work of Curtis et al., the Berkeley people, who dated the KBS tuff at 1.6 and 1.8 million years. The flaw in that date is quite obvious to Fitch, Hooker, and Miller. K-argon apparent ages in the range of 1.6 to 1.8 obtained from the KBS tuff by other workers are regarded as discrepant and may have been obtained from samples affected by argon loss. This exercise can appropriately be named the dating game. Since yours is obviously the correct date, those who arrive at a younger date had samples that obviously had experienced argon loss. A date older than yours can be explained if you declare that those samples had obviously inherited excess argon from older rock. How does one refute this kind of logic? Second problem. Apparent misfits between the faunal sequences will eventually be settled rather arbitrarily by a victory of the pigs over the elephants. Where else but in the world of science fiction could such a confrontation of pigs and elephants have such unlikely results? It's the third problem that's most revealing. It involves archaeologists who are disturbed by the consequent antiquity of hominoid fossils and stone tools found close to or associated with the KBS tuff. Disturbed seems a strange word to describe scientists who are supposed to let facts speak for themselves. I would think that words like interested, amazed, or intrigued would be far more appropriate. Disturbed sounds like they feel threatened. They were. The whole concept of human evolution was on the line. This was the real issue behind a controversy that raged for 10 years over some ash out of a volcano in East Africa. One more item needs to be mentioned. Fitch et al. Commented that the Berkeley group reported scatter in their dates, ranging from 1.5 million years and 6.9. Fitch et al. Reported their own scatter in apparent ages from 0.5 to 2.4 million years. In some cases, the scatter was interpreted as overprinting events. In other cases, naughty crystals were removed to give results more appropriate to the overriding principle behind it all, human evolution. The other article in that 28 October 76 issue of Nature was written by Herford, Gledow, University of Melbourne, Australia, and Nacer, U.S. Geological Survey, Denver. It was about fission track dating of zircon crystals found in the KBS tuff. You're getting an expert on this by now, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
They began, anybody asleep?
No, sir.
They began with a rather remarkable statement regarding the potassium argon and argon 40, 39 argon dating methods. Potassium argon and 40 argon to 39 argon dating techniques have been applied to 100 rock and mineral samples from East Rudolph, but interpretation of the dates determined by these methods has not been straightforward. Geological and analytical factors have been postulated to explain the scatter of KR and 40R, 39R apparent ages, scatter of ages from the different samples, obtained from volcanics, sanidine, anorthoclase crystals separated from pumice cobbles in the tuff. The authors did not imply that the radiometric dating workers were being dishonest. They did say that the interpretation of the dates involves hypothetical and philosophical assumptions that have a bearing on the results. They also stated that their study was conducted because of the apparent conflict between the potassium argon and the 40 argon, 39 argon dating methods, something was played down, that was played down in previous studies. You following me?
Yes, sir.
Their conclusion was that the KBS tuff has a date of 2.44 million years. This was very close to the estimate, and I'm going to take a breath, and they're going to make a station break. Stand up. Stretch. Sorry I haven't got a mint to give you. Now, sit down. They better have the station break done. And if they haven't, they better do it right now. While I count to 10. Their conclusion was that the KBS Tuff has a date of 2.44 million years. This was very close to the estimate of Fitch et al., published in the same issue of Nature. After describing their methodology, they said, using these techniques and the value for the 238 uranium spontaneous fission decay constant, and they give the formula, we have obtained ages on standard zircons which agree very closely with their independently known ages. This remarkable correlation of dates involving two independent dating techniques seemed to confirm all that the general public has been led to believe, that the dating methods can be trusted because independent methods give the same results. However, in the 16th June 1977 issue of Nature, same magazine, appeared a letter from G.A. Wagner of the Max Planck Institute in West Germany. Wagner maintained that there is uncertainty as to the spontaneous fission constant of uranium-238 and that Herford et al. Should have used a different constant. Many fission track specialists no longer use the formula that they had used. I can read it out to you, but it's a complicated mathematical formula. 6.8 times 10 minus, minus 17 here, minus 1 value. But now uses the decay constant, 8.46 times 10 minus 17 year minus 1. That's a big change when you're dealing with that many big numbers. And there's a good reason for this preference. If this value, this higher value for the day constant, decay constant is used, the fission track age of the pumice in the KBS Tuff recalculates to 1.98 million years, which would lend support to the potassium argon age measured by Curtis et al. In other words, there are two different mathematical formulas used and debated to set the decay constant of uranium-238, still not taking into account that there are these independent factors producing uranium-206, which is supposed to be the decay in 207 and 208 by capturing a loose isotope factor out there that is brought in and changes the isotope value. There's all those random things that are involved. Neutrons are running wild. They should have used a different constant. Herford et al. Defended their use of the uranium-238 constant, which was a much smaller factor, by saying when it is used in conjunction with fission track glass standards, the U.S. National Bureau of Standards, we get the best agreement with the KAR ages of coexisting minerals, and we use it for this reason. In other words, the true value of the spontaneous fission constant of uranium-238 is unknown, which is another factor in addition to all the others that I told you about the uncertainty of uranium decay. At least two values are currently in use. Now it's too hot. In matter, that's not one of the values. At least two values are currently in use. In matters of fission track dating, one is thus free to use the value that gives him the answer he's looking for. One can make the age of the KBS Tuff agree with either Fitch or with Curtis, whatever one's pleasure might be. The difference in the two dates is almost a half a million years in dealing with a date of only about 2 to 2.5 million. That hardly seems like precise dating. It's a 25% factor. Because they tended to confirm the older date for Skull 1470, these two studies, dating the KBS Tuff at 2.4 million years, obviously put more strain on the evolutionary establishment. Herford et al. Wrote, Curtis has described the original 2.61 date as being much questioned in private anthropological and paleontological circles. Since anthropologists and paleontologists do not normally have the technical expertise in the radiometric dating methods, they were not challenging the methodology or the assumption of the dating methods. They were rejecting the older date solely because of its philosophic implications. The problem was the modern morphology of skull 1470 versus the demands of evolutionary theory. A new study on the paleomagnetism of the Kobe Flora formation was published in early 1977. It acknowledged that the previous paleomagnetic study had used, quote, the previously published age of 2.6 million years for the KBS tuff as a fixed point. The study cited additional paleomagnetic results as warning a reevaluation of the magnetic stratigraphy. The study gave two different interpretations of the data based upon two different suggested ages. It clearly revealed that dates arrived by paleomagnetism are not independent confirmations, but are closely tied to radiometric results they use as a starting point. Since KBS tuff is the top unit, the following quotation reveals how different the results can be when different starting points are used in this dating game. In both interpretations, the age of the upper member, which lies above KBS tuff, is between 1.2 and 1.8 million years. However, the age of the top boundary of the lower members differs by 1 million years. Around 1976, the name of the large lake on which Richard Leakey had his base of operation was changed by the Kenyan government from Lake Rudolph to Lake Turkana. This change has been fruitful as a source of confusion, since fossils recovered east of the lake continue to carry the designation East Rudolph, whereas fossils recovered from west of the lake, representing more recent work, carry the designation West Turkana. Up to now, we have consistently used the name Lake Rudolph. From now on, we will use the newer name, Lake Turkana. On the 20th of March, 1980, two more dating studies on the KBS tuff appeared in the pages of Nature. Remember the two earlier ones, one on fission track dating of zircons and one on 40 argon, 39 argon dating of orthoclast crystals, agreed closely with the age 2.4 million years. They cited the close correlation of two independent dating methods as validation. Now, two studies, one on fission track dating of zircons and one on KAR dating of orthoclast crystals, agreed closely that the age is 1.87 or 1.8. Now, if your head's spinning, I've succeeded. There ain't nothing certain about this. You got that at least?
Sure.
You got it all, I think. They also cited the close correlation. This is real overkill. You can see why I can't support everything I say in a message. I mean, I would be preaching sermons like they used to read while the people stood through the entire Torah, all five books. Now, these two studies show 1.8, 1.89. 1.87, 1.89. They also cited the close correlation of two independent dating methods as validating their accuracy for the revised date. The new fission track study was Gleadell, A.J.W. Gleadell. The potassium argon study was Ian McDoodle, Robert Meyer, P. Sutherland Hawks, all of the Australian National University, Canberra, and A.J.W. Gleadell. Then in 81, Ian McDoodle, Dougal, published in Nature his 40 argon, 39 argon study of the KBS tuff, giving a date of 1.88 million. At that point, the 10-year controversy over the date of KBS tuff came to a close. Concordance on the more recent date had been achieved. At first glance, it would seem to be a tremendous victory for evolution and the uniformitarian dating methods. We know that science often proceeds with trial and error and by controversy. The fact that an amazing correlation between the pig evidence and three different dating methods had been achieved should be something to celebrate. The dating of KBS Tough was now a non-issue. Yet there were factors that demand a closer look at the situation. The power of the pigs. The dating of the KBS Tough was not settled in 1980 and 1981 by the conformity of three different dating methods. The controversy was actually settled in 1975 by the pigs. Donald Johnson, or Johansson, tells of attending the Bishop Conference on Anthropology and Geology in London. The dating of the KBS Tough and its implications were major topics of conversation. Glenn Isaac, who accepted the older date, arrived with a, quote, pig-proof helmet. He was wearing labeled pig-proof helmet to protect himself against the pigmen. This is a scientific conference sponsored by the bishop. A major paper was presented by Basil Cook, Dalhousie University, Halifax, who had studied the pig sequence at Omo, a fossil area in southern Ethiopia on the Omo River, which flows into Lake Turkana from the north, at Hadar, the Ethiopian site where Johansson had worked, and at Old Divide Gorge, where Louis and Mary Lake Leakey worked for many years. According to Cook, the dating at Lake Turkana, based on the dating methods, was off by about 800,000 years. The pigs at Turkana told him so. He even wore a tie with the letters MCP woven into it. They stood for male chauvinist pig. But Cook claimed that they really stood for Mesocoeris correlates properly, the Latin name for the pig species. Mesocoeris was the species of fossil pig that was central to his argument. Johansson wrote of the 1975 conference, quote, "Nearly everyone but the Lake Turkana team, Richard Leakey and his associates, went away convinced that the KBS Tough and the Skull 1470, go to the restroom for all of us, and the Skull 1470 dates would have to be corrected." Anybody else want to go to the restroom? I don't want any calamities in here. Hands up. Good. We all got bladder control. Back to science. Nearly everyone but the Lake Turkana team, remember Richard Leakey had a lot at stake, went away convinced that the KBS Tough and the Skull 1470 dates would have to be corrected. Astounding about the whole affair was that the anthropologists were rejecting the same objective scientific data that they universally appealed to. At that time, the radiometric evidence for the older date was very strong, and they'd long since forgotten the original 212 to 230 million years. There was internal consistency with the studies, a high degree of conformity by five different dating techniques. The main thing the dates did not conform was to the concept of the evolution of pigs and humans. They couldn't be that old. The evolution of pigs is said to be the clear-cut answer to the dating problem at Koebi Fora as well as elsewhere in East Africa. But the evidence is less than impressive. From his phylogeny of pigs, bush pig, forest hog, warthog, etc., Basil Cook presented family trees for three taxonomic groups. Two of the groups have their base at their bases the phrase hypothetical Seuss-like ancestor. The 20 species that make up these three groups are all shown in parallel lines connected only by dotted lines, indicating that there is no known relationship between any of the species. The parallel line chart could just as well have been drawn by a creationist. Most of the fossil pig evidence consisted of teeth. Several species are based on the skimpiest of evidence, imperfectly known, rare, scarce, and the various relationships are largely judgment calls. In his report, terms such as these appear. It's probably ancestral. Seems to represent. Suggests that evolved independently. Must at this stage also be giving rise to. Probably ancestral to. Suggests a derivation from. May have branched off. Almost certainly branched off from. Demand descent from a common ancestor. That's all subjective opinion. Cook's article was written in response to one by White and Harris. Cook had three taxonomic groups while White and Harris had four. There are differences in the two taxonomies. But Cook maintained they were of no great moment. He went on to explain why species of white and hairs are grouped together should be separate and vice versa. And they argued and argued and argued and argued. In other words, Cook's view was accepted because the pigs supported a lower gate. That's the important thing for you to get in your head. And when we get done with all of this data, you find that there was a derivation among all the different studies. After explaining that Fitch and Miller actually reported results ranging from 052 to 264 million years in one set of studies, and ages from 8.43 to 17.5 million in another, before settling on 261, which they later revised to 242, we got a discrepancy in the materials from 0.52 to 17.5. But they threw out everything that didn't fit within the already agreed upon phase, and then that, based upon other fossils than the hominoid and the tools, created a problem for evolutionists because that's too old. So a pig expert comes in from Ethiopia studies and gives a date that's a million years younger, and that decides they have to revise all of the datings and throw out everything that's older. This clear victory of philosophy over observation gives validity to the date for KBS Tough. McDougall, another scientist analyzing all this, issued one of the most stinging rebukes of fellow scientists that I can remember seeing in scientific literature. He referred to Fitch et al. And their older date for the KBS Tough when he said, on the basis of the large scatter of the ages and the small proportion of 40 argon in the gas extracted from the anorthoclase concentrates, I suggest that the results are analytically less precise than those given by the authors. I suggest that unrecognized analytical difficulties and larger than quoted errors must be invoked to explain these earlier results. McDougall was accusing Fitch et al. Of invoking what is affectionately known in scientific circles as, quote, the fudge factor. Deliberate falsification of data to achieve a desired result. The study of the 10-year controversy in the dating of the KBS Tough is tremendously revealing. Whereas the public is led to believe that these dating methods are highly objective and accurate, the scientific literature itself reveals they are highly subjective. There's no question that rock samples are often manipulated to give the desired results. There is also no question that this manipulation is done, he says, in utmost sincerity and with the noblest motives, not from my view, but it is manipulation nonetheless. Right. The bad material must be removed to allow the good material to be dated. But there's no way of knowing for sure which material is good and which is bad except your prior view. The radioactive dating methods are classic examples of self-deception and circular reasoning. It is another of the myths of human evolution. Nasser et al. Have said it well, the accuracy of any age can only be guessed at, in that we do not know the true age of any geologic sample. We can only strive for the best agreement with potassium argon and other dating methods. What normally happens in fossil discovery is that fossils are discovered first. Then attempts are made to date the rock strata in which they're found. Under these conditions, a paleoanthropologist has a degree of control over the results. He is free to reject dates that do not fit the evolution scenario of the fossils. He's not even required to publish these obviously anomalous dates. The result is a very misleading picture of the conformity of the human fossil record with the concept of human evolution. If in many of these fossil sites the dates had been determined before the fossils had been discovered, evolutionists could not guarantee that the turbulent history of the dating of KBS Tough would not have been repeated many times. The pigs won. In the 10-year controversy over the dating of one of the most important human fossils ever discovered, the pigs won. The pigs won over the elephants. The pigs won over K potassium argon dating. The pigs won over argon 4039 argon dating. The pigs won over fission track dating. They won over paleomagnetism. The pigs took it all. But in reality, it wasn't the pigs that won. It was evolution that won. In the dating game, evolution always wins. Pretty revealing, isn't it?
Yes,
and pretty serious when you realize that your kids are saturated with this garbage and the truth must be buried in sex magazines. Pretty sickening. Makes your participation in this ministry pretty important, doesn't it?
Yes, sir.
Sick world, worshiping the creator or the creature more than the creator. Perverse, self-aggrandizing, and knowing deception to ungod the universe. But again, I say, as you make the reservations, do you have any idea how much the devil wants me to close the cathedral down and not continue this series? What a tragedy. There was nobody standing with Jesus the night he saved the world. And the man who saved Christianity, the Apostle Paul, had to say, only Luke is with me. As we take his message and fight these intellectual forces in the tunnel, can you get a fresh vision of how important your presence and your support is? What if someone calls to order the Roman series, the back messages, and there's no voice of faith here to take the call? May God rebaptize this congregation in an understanding of how important your participation with me as the Aaron and Hur in this ministry is. And you've got 7 minutes to get on the phone, give me your response, and make your reservations for next Sunday at the cathedral.